Best-selling writer Gary Steingart has until now been best known for his novels Absurdistan and Super Sad True Love Story, which was named one of the 10 best books of the year by New York Times Book Review and Time Magazine.
In his novels, Steingart mined the raw material of his life as fodder for fiction. Now he's getting rave reviews for telling the truth in his new memoir, Little Failure. The book is the story of Steingart's immigrant experience moving with his family from Soviet Russia to Queens, New York in 1979.
And it's also the history of his strange and at times searing relationship with his parents and the forces that made him the writer he is today. Gary, welcome to Central Time.
Great to be here.
Well, I read a quote from you recently about your new memoir and about writing, and the gist of it was that for you, the act of writing is something that should make you bleed. And this memoir, it sort of has that feeling, like you bled a little for it. It just feels incredibly honest. What was your experience like writing a memoir after having written fiction?
Yeah, there's about 350 pages in this book, and each one was a real nice paper cut. So there was a nice amount of Band-Aids used afterwards. It's tough. You know, I've written satires before, and they're fun to write. You have a rollicking good time, and you can get a little deep, but you can always sort of hide under humor. That's your sort of safety blanket. But with a memoir, which has to be the truth, a lot of stuff was very funny growing up in two different countries, the Soviet Union and the United States. But a lot of stuff was paper cut worthy, and that's, I think, what I went with.
Well, the title of your book is Little Failure. There's a Russian equivalent that your mother uses. It's a nickname from her. And at one point in the book, you know, you ask the reader to notice just how often the words anxious and mother appear together in your book. Can you talk about what that relationship was like?
Yeah, she was like many Soviet Jewish mothers, not all of them, but many. She had a terrific kind of anxiety that I think, was the result of being born in 1945, just as Hitler's armies were being vanquished and just as Stalin was again starting up with a new purge. So all around her, so many relatives. She has a whole photo album called Uncle So-and-So in Belarusia, whole family murdered and buried alive. You know, not many people have photo albums like that. So I think genetically and historically, she was very predisposed to be quite anxious. But when I was growing up, and I was very sick as a child, that anxiety only increased. I was very asthmatic, and she kept, you know, locking me into rooms so that the microbes wouldn't get me and stuff like that. And that made me an anxious young boy, and I was scared of everything. I was scared of the telephone, which used to freak me out, and ceiling fans were particularly an object of great consternation.
Well, in this book, there's darkness and there's a lot of humor. You talked about your mother having lost so many relatives, and there are pictures in the book. I remember one in particular. It looks like a family shot, and you indicate two people. I think it's two of your father's relatives, and then the caption is, "Everyone else was about to die very soon," and you don't even bother naming them. So there's this humor and this darkness side by side. Is there something unique to your family, or is that something uniquely Russian?
I think that's a kind of Russian humor, which is very much humor from the edge of the grave, because what happens to Russians by and by is that terrible things happen. Entire generations are wiped out. There's always one stupid ideology after another, whether it's the worst serfdom that ever existed in the world, followed by the worst socialist system, and now followed by a horrible kleptocracy, turbo-capitalist type system. So, you know, bad things happen to Russians, and the only way to deal with that is to constantly poke fun at it.
Well, you were only, I think, 7 years old when you made the move from Leningrad to the United States to Queens, New York. Can you describe what that transition felt like to you?
It was terrible. I mean, at first it was wonderful when we landed, and I remember the Pan Am terminal. Those of you who are older may remember it. It was called the Worldport. It was just torn down, but it looked just like a flying saucer. That was the first thing we saw when we landed at JFK Airport. And I thought, my God, it's science fiction. We didn't have anything like that in the Soviet Union. Everything looked very drab and sad. And then my first Chevrolet Corvette, which I thought was an airplane just with its wings folded down. That's how futuristic it looked. But the other bad thing, I mean, the bad thing about it was that this was 1980, you know, the era of Ronald Reagan's evil empire speech. So the kids in Hebrew school hated me so much because I was wearing this big Soviet fur hat that I was telling them I wasn't born in Leningrad. I was born in East Berlin. I was trying to tell Jewish kids I was a German.
Yeah.
And that was a positive thing, better than being a Russian. So it was a very strange time.
Is that part of, you know, what you would call, I mean, we lump so many things under the heading the immigrant experience, but is that part of it, do you think, at some point for a lot of immigrants, kind of denying the culture, the country that you came from, but also feeling like you're not quite set up to join the country that you're in?
Yeah, it was very, I mean, all those movies, Red Dawn, Red Gerbil, Red Hamster, everything was, you know, everywhere I looked, there was some sign that the country was angry at me. And I couldn't understand it at all. Like the majority of immigrants from communist countries, my family was incredibly Republican. And I was, you know, until college, really, I was quite Republican as well. And I thought, I'm as patriotic. And you know, at age 11, I was sent a card from the National Rifle Association. At age 11, I was an NRA member. What's more patriotic than that, I thought. And still people hated me because they associated me with being Russian. So I started writing these science fiction stories for my class in a way that I wanted the kids to see me as something different, as maybe a storyteller as opposed to just an immigrant. And losing my accent, which took a long, long time, that was really instrumental. And getting rid of that big fur hat.
Did you try to get rid of the accent, or did it just fall away?
I tried so hard. I would stand in front of a mirror and practice saying words in English. We had an apartment which had an attic. I was very proud that we had an attic in this garden apartment, and I kept saying, "Come to my attic," you know. So I tried to scrub attic, make attic sound like attic instead of attic. That was one of the hardest words.
Well, the core of this book is your relationship with your parents and the baggage they themselves carried from Russia, metaphorically. And your father in particular, he seemed like this unknowable ocean of feeling and frustration. And when you were little, he was your best friend. What happened when you got older and you moved to America?
Well, I think that there was a very different style of parenting that people who grew up in the Soviet Union, which is in itself a very difficult place to grow up. It involves, you know, being able to call your son a little failure. There are occasional smacks across the head for grades not earned or math problems not solved or cottage cheese not finished. So it's a very different parenting style, and it's a hard one, whereas America is a much softer country. And I think that's sort of the difficulty that we had. We didn't just cross international borders. We sort of crossed interplanetary ones when we came from the Soviet Union, the country that obviously no longer even exists. So I think that baggage weighed pretty heavily on me. But as I was writing this book, a lot of the anger I felt toward my parents in my 20s and 30s when I was struggling to become a writer, and I didn't always feel like they were supportive of me. They wanted me to be a lawyer like all other immigrant parents. But some of that anger turned into a kind of feeling of sadness and sorrow for them by the time I finished writing this memoir, in the sense that they did grow up in the worst circumstances imaginable, and they never had the kind of chance that I had. You know, it was a very anti-Semitic society. My father wanted to be an opera singer, and there was just no way that he could have done that under that system, even though he had a wonderful voice. So I understood his frustrations, and I understood why they had so much trouble believing that I could succeed in any kind of creative capacity. And it's a very sad story in that way, because it's about people who love each other but who should understand each other more, but the gap in how we grew up is just too great.
Well, we're talking right now with author Gary Steingart about his new memoir. It's called Little Failure. It's a story of his family's move from Leningrad to the United States.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-123 with your questions or maybe your experiences. Does Gary's story sound familiar? Did you immigrate to the United States? What was your experience like? Did you encounter similar problems fitting in, as Gary was just talking about, with language or with the stress it put on your family? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org.
We're picking up now on our conversation with Gary Steingart about his new memoir. It's called Little Failure, and it's the story of his move from Leningrad to Queens, New York when he was 7 years old and the bumpy ride that made him the writer he is now.
And the door is open for you, too. Does listening bring back memories of your immigrant experience? You can reach us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Let's go to the phones right now. We've got Jesus joining us from Walworth. Hi, Jesus.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Doing well, how are you?
Good, good. A little cold.
What do you think? Does this sound at all familiar?
Well, it does, it does. The adjustment, even if you have a good cultural background, it's hard sometimes in the United States for different reasons, rejection or new things that you're not quite open, ready to embrace them, or things that you don't understand. But one thing that is very important for us to remember, speaking in general about Russia and Russians and any background from the Russian people, is that Russians have never been really, the people of Russia have never been our enemies. We were made to believe that. Remember that the Imperial Russia, the real Russia, was ready to intervene in assisting us and giving us economical and warfare support. In regards to being an immigrant here, it's been hard to adjust. I also wanted to be an opera singer. I had to let it go, unfortunately, for sickness. But other things have been important in my life, like taking a new career or new studies. And at times I encounter the rejection of certain people that impede progress in those things. But all I had to do is just kind of readjust my mindset and walk away and take a new route for anything that I've been wanted to do.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing, Jesus. Lots of thoughts there about what it's like. Any comments, Gary, for Jesus?
Well, yes. I mean, I think America still is. Nobody treats immigrants as well as America treats immigrants. That's really the main strength of our country. When you look at, for example, literary fiction, you'll see writers like Junot Diaz from the Dominican Republic and Chang Rae-Lee from Korea and, you know, and Dumpa Lahiri from India. And they are a major part of our culture, of our literary culture, for sure. In a way that doesn't really happen in other countries like Germany, for example, or Italy, where there are immigrants, writers, and other artists, but they are not as well integrated. So in the end, America integrates you almost too well, so that by the next generation, there's very little besides, you know, an unusual sounding last name. There really is very little of the old culture.
Well, these days, I mean, you talked earlier about trying to get rid of your Russian accent and how that was crucial to your assimilating. But you wear Russia on your sleeve more these days. I read about you going on a vodka drinking tour with a journalist. You talk Russian culture. Do you feel Russian enough now that you can wear it, you know, with more pride?
Yeah, well, it was interesting because when I was in Hebrew school and during the Reagan era, I was very sheepish about being from the Soviet Union. But by the time I got to Oberlin College, which, as you know, is a kind of very progressive liberal arts college in Ohio, everyone was trying to be something other than just American. Everyone was flaunting as much as they could. So I was all ready to, you know, get that fur hat out of dry cleaning and put it back on again, because it seemed like that was the way things are. And today, you know, you look at Americans and there's a huge industry in just trying to figure out one's genealogy. Nobody's sort of content with just the, you know, just being American anymore. People want to know where they came from. And for someone like me who actually was born somewhere else, that's become a real story to tell. You know, the four books that I've written in one way or another concern immigration. And that's a topic I think that is going to be even more important to America as this country tilts from the kind of Anglo-Saxon Protestant white majority that it's had for so long.
Let's go back to the phones again. We've got Steve on the line from Eagle. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Gary. I'm a great admirer of your satire in particular, and look forward to your memoir. I think the point I actually was going to ask about has kind of been made, that there's been a resurgence in America of just being proud of one's ethnic identity. I grew up about 10 years before you. I'm just an American native, but in a time where things were quite homogenized, and it seems that people have more pride now. So I guess my only point that hasn't been made now is maybe you could work to develop your Russian accent back again.
Do you still have it, Gary? Is it in there?
I can probably do that. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I, this is our greatest asset. That's why it drives me crazy when politicians try to, you know, hamper the inflow of immigrants into this country. The greatest strength we have, I mean, you look at so many other societies, even China, which is doing so well, but its population is graying. There's not a lot of in-migration. And that's going to hurt the economy and the whole society down the line, whereas we keep rejuvenating ourselves by constantly asking people to come, by constantly allowing people to settle within our shores. So immigration, good.
Well, the spotlight has been on Russia again because of the games in Sochi. Now, in the lead-up, the coverage had not been that positive. You know, there's a lot of talk about terrorism and the Ring of Steel around the city and all of that. And there were some critiques that, you know, American coverage of the Olympics was jingoistic and that, hey, guys, the Cold War is over. Did you notice? I don't know. Do you think any of that is true? What do you think, I guess, of the coverage and the way that we've been talking and thinking about Russia?
Well, I'll be honest, this is my 41st year of my life of not caring about the Winter Olympics. I just don't care. I like the Summer Olympics a little more because there's some swimming and badminton, that nerdish sport that I enjoy so much. But I always sort of miss out on the Winter Olympics. But I will say this, $50 billion, which is the price tag for this, which by far dwarfs anything else that's ever been spent. $8 billion, for example, was spent on the Winter Olympics in Vancouver. That is insane for a country that is still relatively impoverished. I mean, $50 billion could have rejuvenated huge parts of Russia, which outside of Moscow and St. Petersburg, the two sort of Western cities, are in deep trouble. You know, you walk a little bit outside of Sochi and you see villages that may have existed in the 18th century in Russia. It's really a complete waste of money just to shore up one's image as a resurgent superpower. But, you know, that's since the time of the Potemkin village, that's how it's been done. Money has been spent on looking good instead of actually helping Russians live longer lives. I mean, the life expectancy for men is under 60 years old. So, if I was in Russia, I wouldn't just be middle-aged. I'd be, you know, closer to retirement at age 41. So it's just, I think, a misuse of money.
There's a thread in your book that we haven't gotten to yet, and that is your anxiety. When you got to America, when you were in your 20s, you started to have panic attacks. And I wonder if, in a way, this book is an attempt to get to the bottom of that, about where it came from and how it had to do with who you are, who your family is. Was there a therapeutic element here?
Well, as somebody who's been in psychotherapy for a very long time, that's really the therapy. The writing is... Maybe it's sort of, it runs parallel to the therapy because it's something that you explore about yourself. So before you write a memoir, so much of it has already been said in a therapist's office. But the actual writing isn't that therapeutic. As we, you know, we started out with the image of paper cuts. That's pretty much correct. You know, I'd wake up every morning and I'd say, all right, I'm 12 years old now. What's going on? My parents are fighting. They're worried about losing their jobs. The kids hate me because, I'm this big furry immigrant. And reliving those things was maybe helpful in terms of figuring out who I am, but certainly not helpful in terms of short-term mental health. Don't try this at home.
And Gary, in the last 30 seconds we have, what do your parents think of this book? I gather they haven't quite read it yet because it hasn't been translated, but Based on what they know, what do they think?
I don't know. I mean, I really want to reserve their judgment for when they read it in Russian. Hopefully it'll be translated like my other books. And then they can yell at me with some good foundation for it, for their anger.
All right. Well, Gary, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much. Take care.
That was Gary Steingart, the author of several novels, including Super Sad True Love Story. And the new memoir we've been talking about is called Little Failure.